All right. Hey, it's always a pleasure to connect with our friend Jake Wimberly. He's the host of the Afternoon Drive ESPN Radio out of Mississippi. And we're having him on today to talk about his CFB Hourglass projections. Jake, how's it going?
Michael, it is good. And I know when me and you talk, it's getting closer and closer to football. I believe as we cut this today, we're 100 days away from college football. It's right there in the distance.
Yeah, so before we get into some of the projections, can you kind of explain the CFB Hourglass and any tweaks you made since last year? Last year you came on here and, man, old clickbait Jake said Texas going undefeated. They damn near did. You said Alabama's going 8-4. They didn't care for that. You nailed that. Any adjustments that you made this year to the model?
There's been some tweaks. And first off, if you're new to hearing what we do here at CFBHourglass.com, this is not unique. There's other people that have been doing this longer than me. Dave Bartu has done this for a long time. Bill Conley, Kelly Ford. I mean, you can go around the country. There's a lot of guys and girls that do analytics. And this is just my way of doing things just because, for full transparency, former engineer, minored in mathematics. So I love a mathematical approach to college sports just to see it. And look, it's not 100% true, but basically what the model is, if we get down to a base level, it encompasses a few things. One, talent. We've got to have talent. So used to, we would have the model on a 3 or 4 year talent, average talent per team. So that's pretty easy, right? You can take your recruiting rankings, and Alabama's had the number one class for 4 straight years. Well, they've probably got the number one roster in the country. Not so easy now, but we'll get to that here in just a minute. But talent is a big key to this. Also, coach rankings, and I do it on a 3 year churn because coaches, I think a lot of them, they tend to migrate either up or down after about a 3 year period. There's data to prove that, and obviously Nick Saban is an outlier. Urban Meyer, when he was rolling, was an outlier. You get some of those. Dabo Swinney's kind of an outlier. So coaching, talent, quarterback play, and that's returning quarterback play. So some of these quarterback numbers that are out there that you'll see in the preseason, they'll see DJ Lagway kind of down in the middle or close to the end of my rankings, and that's because of we only have a small sample size of what we have seen on the field. His recruiting ranking is batched in with the actual team talent. And then we have a wide receiver metric where we look at wide receiver rooms because I think that's a pivotal part, offensive and defensive scoring efficiency. So you cook all that together, it gives you a stamp or a number, kind of a power rating for each team, and we're able to project records with that. We can go to Vegas and say, hey, what does these lines potentially look like? Sometimes we're right, sometimes we're not. Give you two ends of the spectrum real quick before we get going. 2 years ago, pegged Michigan on your show to win the national title. Perfect. Last year, said Florida would win 2 ball games. They won 8. So, I mean, it just sometimes there are things that happen and you can't get 130 some of these right. But as far as tweaks for this year, really just trying to, Mike, kind of learn more about the transfer portal and how we can quantify that in our talent metrics, because it's very, very hard to look at these rosters because we're all relearning rosters every year, right? I mean, we're relearning who's at Georgia, who's at Florida, who's at Mississippi State or Ole Miss. So really trying to kind of really dial that in more. And then also looking at some of the efficiency numbers and how we can tweak that as well, because, just because you take Ole Miss with Lane Kiffin, you can say pretty much every year their offensive efficiency numbers are going to be on par regardless of who the quarterback is. What about defensive efficiencies? They lost a lot of guys, so do we need to tweak that? So there's always some tweaking of the model that goes into this.
Yeah, I was going to completely ignore your 2-win Florida prediction because I threw that out last offseason, and buddy, not only you, but they were coming at me for saying that I did it. So, but there are always misses. I got more misses than anybody in the country, so I don't hold it against you. All right, so at the top of the list, we're going to run down all the teams in the SEC according to the CFB Hourglass. You nailed Texas virtually last year. That they had one hiccup against one of the best teams in the country. But the model, again, says Texas going 12-0 year 2 in the SEC. Why Texas running through the SEC undefeated, does the model say?
Well, the model says 12-0, but you can go look. If you go pull up on CFBHourglass.com, the Texas article, you'll see some of these ball games are highlighted as possible one-possession ball games. So, for instance, I think if you look at Texas this year, You look at the first game against Ohio State. I mean, that is a game that, it's going to be a very close game. I've got Texas at about Texas minus about 3.5 in that game. Vegas will probably favor Ohio State by a point, point and a half, or even a push. But that's a game that they could potentially lose for sure. Right there. You look at some of these other games. Obviously, you look at the Oklahoma game, the Florida game on the road, Georgia on the road, and Texas A&M. So there's about four or five games that Texas is going to have to buckle up, and play four quarters and really be, that type of team. But to go undefeated, I think a couple things you look at. One, Steve Sarkisian has been as good as he has ever been since he's been at Texas. He's as a recruiter, learning how to work the transfer portal. They have some of the best talent in the country when you look at the talent metrics. Arch Manning, I know that he is the flavor of the year, and you can talk to 10 different people and five are going to say he's going to be great, and five are going to say, hey, let's pump the brakes. We don't know yet. I tend to lean towards the man, and this is going to sound weird, and I'm probably going to get roasted, so bring it on. I lean towards, hey, the bloodline of an old dog, right? So if you got a hunting dog that's out there that can hunt, no, normally their puppies can hunt. Archie, Eli, Peyton, they've all done it. You got to assume he's probably going to be that guy. So quarterback play, explosiveness on offense. I think this is the type of team that can go undefeated. Now, does that mean that their heads and shoulders better than the next five that's competing for the national championship? Probably not. I don't think we have that type of team, but I do like Texas to go undefeated.
Yeah, I'm glad you hit on Arch because I did want to ask you because your hourglass also ranks the quarterbacks, and you got Arch number four. Now, again, you kind of outlined this with DJ Lagway, but I just want to clarify for the Texas fans that are throwing stuff at their screen. They're throwing their water bottles at the screen right now, Jake, throwing a flag on this damn Arch at number four. But yeah, your model relies heavily on production, right? So the sample size is small, and we know he's an elite talent. He was an elite five-star recruit. But that goes back into the talent metric. You don't double up on talent and quarterback. Am I understanding all that correctly?
That is absolutely correct. I mean, we can't base these quarterbacks on hype. So, yes, Arch Manning, number four on the list. And you can see that if you go to the list, there's articles on this out there. 18.5 for Arch. That's just the number that he lands at. Whereas John Mathier, number one in the SEC for me at Oklahoma, 27.2. And you go look at his production last year, it was unbelievable. I know people will say, yeah, but Washington State. Garrett Nussmeier, we've seen a lot of him. Diego Pavi in front of him, a lot of him. So, yes, to answer your question, the production, and I will do as diligently as I can, updated quarterback rankings in the SEC every week once we get in season. And so you'll start to see some of these guys move up and some of them move down based on the way they're performing.
All right. So number two, according to the models, got Georgia 10-2. They would have run you out of Athens, Jake, with that a couple years ago, but that's exactly what they did last year, 10-2 through one of the most difficult schedules in the country. Just as difficult. We're just flipping a lot of the home and away games. What does the model say about Georgia?
And the talent is still obviously one of the best rosters in the country for Georgia. I wanted to have the old pregnant pause on Gunnar Stockton. We'll see. I mean, I think, you got to give Kirby the benefit of the doubt. They've brought, productive quarterbacks through that program, since he's been there, and even Mark Richt prior to him. But you look at the schedule, that's the big thing. And how deep is Georgia? That's the thing. And, we remember this with the transfer portal, and we saw it with Alabama. It really took effect in that semifinal loss to Michigan State, or excuse me, to Michigan a couple years ago. Is they didn't have a whole lot of offensive line help, and they had a center that kept snapping the ball low to Jalen Milroe. And a lot of people ask those questions: is why didn't they change centers? Well, I don't know that they actually had a guy they believed in. So, what is the depth like at Georgia? And when you look at Tennessee, I think that'll be a close ball game at Tennessee. I've got them winning that. I've got them beating Alabama, but I'm gonna do that with one eye closed because they have that at home, and we know that Alabama has typically had their number. I think Florida in the cocktail party, Florida, I think is a matchup, that does not benefit Georgia, especially if DJ Lagway is healthy, and then of course Texas as well. So, and there's some other games out there. This is a very, very, very tough schedule for Georgia, and I think it's so tough that Georgia could probably go 9-3 and still make the playoff.
And your model still's got Kirby Smart as the best head coach in the SEC.
Yes.
I don't think anybody's really debating that one.
No, that is correct.
All right, LSU also projected to go 10-2, so it certainly sounds like they'll be going to the college football playoff in Baton Rouge. What's your model say about the Tigers?
You know, LSU is one of those teams, and my audience here in the state of Mississippi always gives me grief, but it's, I always tell people here, if I pick LSU one way, go the other. That's a one team. It's been very, very hard to read. Brian Kelly, for all the weirdness that he is a good football coach. We know that. I mean, two 10-win seasons, a 9-win season. Obviously, you know, he's got that monkey on his back of the opener we'll see against Clemson. Garrett Nussmeier, I mean, he is a guy that if he can, you know, cut down on the turnovers, he could be the best quarterback in the country. And if you don't believe it, look at Vegas, where they have him, I believe, second in the preseason Heisman odds. So he is a guy, he is a dude that will play in the National Football League if he can stay healthy. We know LSU has talent. The defense has gotten better over the last year and a half. You know, the thing for LSU is going to be the schedule for the Tigers, you know, opening on the road against Clemson. I mean, I think that is a big bit, you know, that may be the funnest matchup of the weekend, week one for me. You look at Florida coming into Baton Rouge in week three. We'll know a lot about LSU 3 weeks in, and of course they've got to go to Ole Miss. That's been a nip and tuck ball game for both of those clubs the last several years. You know, South Carolina at home, Texas A&M at home. You know, they get you know the luxury of having those games at home, but then they have to go to Bama and Oklahoma. So I think for LSU to get to 10-2, I do think it's possible. That's what the model says. They may land out more like 9-3. But this is a team, again, like Texas, they're going to have to go, they're going to find themselves. And this is why we love the SEC. LSU will find themselves, you're going to cut the TV on or be there in several weekends where it's going to be a four-quarter ball game and they're going to have to make a play.
And I know we're just specifically talking SEC, but I just wanted to ask you quickly, if you have it on the top of your head, what does the model say about Clemson? Because I'm just curious. You know, we're seeing some people project them as the number one team in the nation. I'm just curious if you know where your model has them.
We've been talking about that as well. Clemson, as I started churning these things out, and you know, you can kind of look at it and go, as we get closer to the end of the year and you see where who's coming back, like, well, you know, I'm gonna be curious to see where this team lands in the model, where this team lands. Clemson was surprising. I have Clemson actually playing for the national championship against Texas.
Wow.
I think Clemson is very good. You know, when you look at the returning production that they had one of the younger teams in college football last year. Cade Klubnik, you can make an argument, he's the best quarterback coming back. This looks to be an old school Dabo Swinney team where he had with Trevor Lawrence or Deshaun Watson. I like this Clemson team. Now, does that mean that they can go through and win the national title? Maybe, maybe not. But in that conference, I think they are the superior team this year.
Okay, Jake, I think we're going to cut it because anybody that says they like Clemson, I'm done talking with them. Just kidding. All right, next, you got this one kind of, you know, shouldn't have shocked me, but it did a little bit here. Texas A&M, the model's got them 10-2 and a contender. Man, the model's buying him to the offseason, the annual offseason Aggie hype.
You know, these things, this is not AI that I use, but obviously, like some AI models, maybe there is some favoritism here. Yeah, you know, you look at Texas A&M, talent has, at least on paper, never been the problem for Texas A&M. And, you know, when you look at defensive play, they've typically played pretty darn good defensive football. It's offensively, what does this team look like? And, you know, we forget, or a lot of people may forget, last year they were right there at the end of this thing. We were talking about a potential Texas A&M SEC championship game. You know, again, the SEC at quarterback this year is going to be a remarkable league to watch. There's so many unknowns, and I have right now Marcell Reed as the sixth best quarterback in the SEC. He could be much better than that. You know, you have to ask the question, is he the quarterback that we saw dominate LSU, or is he the quarterback that we saw kind of struggle down the stretch? So if he can be, and you know, talking to Olin Buchanan, and I know you talked to a lot of these guys as well, a lot of the guys, boots on the ground down there, they love this kid, and they think he is an opportunity to be very, very special. So if he's special, then I think that bodes well for a team that brings back a lot of talent, and they're going to play a you know a tough-nosed type of football. They'll get their oil checked. You know, week three they got to go to Notre Dame. That's a return trip there. They after the bye week they host Auburn. They will host Florida. They do have to go to LSU and of course at Texas and host South Carolina. So I like Texas A&M, but again in this and I keep going back to quarterbacks this year. It's every year, but specifically this year, the quarterbacks that really pop off the page. There, you know, especially when you start talking about there's not a whole lot of difference in talent at Texas A&M versus LSU, even Texas and Georgia and Alabama. Which signal caller is going to rise to the top? And I think Marcell Reed has an opportunity to be one of those guys.
Yeah, I'm so glad you said that, Jake, because I feel like all the offseason conversation, Marcell Reed is the quarterback that gets completely lost when going into last year, he was not getting any of the reps. He was the backup thrown into the lineup, and he had a hell of a lot of big plays. So we'll see if he takes that big step forward. Now, in the next category, these are all listed as pretenders. Tennessee 9-3 according to the model. How dare you, Jake? Why Tennessee 9-3 here?
Well, hey, you got to love what Josh Heupel has done at Tennessee, right? I mean, the guy has done nothing but win and breed a new form of excitement in Knoxville. You guys know that better than anybody. And you know, I had to go back and kind of re-scrub the Tennessee, model after the Nico Iamaleava exit and then bringing in Joey Aguilar. But, you know, really it looks like, I mean, at least on paper, and I know you and I spoke about this on my show a couple weeks ago, that if he doesn't turn the ball over, he's the kind of guy that can kind of keep things together. He can keep things together. And, you know, one of the things for Tennessee that you got to like is you got to like Tennessee's schedule. I mean, obviously the opener against Syracuse, that's a game they can't fall asleep with, at the wheel. But in Georgia on week three, but East Tennessee, UAB at Mississippi State, that's an SEC road game they can go get. Arkansas, you know, they got to go to Alabama, but you host Oklahoma. You go to Kentucky, that looks like they're fading away. I mean, there's some wins on here for Tennessee. And I tell everybody, don't ever apologize for your schedule being a little easier than some of the others. Because, I mean, I think coaches will welcome some of that. But, yeah, Tennessee, I mean, I think they're a team that can still get back to the playoff. But I think they may be a player or two away.
Mm-hmm. And then next you got Oklahoma 9-3. And, again, you already said John Mateer, number one quarterback. So what is the model saying about the Sooners year two in the SEC?
Yeah, and, you know, when I put this out originally about 6 weeks ago, there was a lot of this guy's a fraud. This, come on, Oklahoma 9-3. Look, this was a really good defense last year under Brent Venables, and you know, he has taken ownership of this thing and said, hey, I'm gonna be the one, you know, I've had to, however how you paraphrase it, put my teams on my back before. I'm doing it here. You bring in John Mateer, and humor me here with this just a minute. And everybody says, well, yeah, but he played at Washington State. So did Cam Ward. And if John Mateer can have the same kind of effect, he's a mobile guy. He can get you a first down with his feet. He can break a long run. He can make a big play in the passing game. They have brought in, you know, running back from Cal. They've worked the transfer portal. They've rebuilt this Texas offense. If the defense is the same or similar, then this team is going to be a team to be reckoned with, I think, in the SEC. Now, we'll find out week two, that Michigan ball game. Michigan coming to Norman, Oklahoma. Man, I tell you what, that if I could break away and go to a game, that's one I'd want to go to week two, because I think you're going to see, we're going to really find out what Oklahoma's made out of. But, you know, they get a lot of big games at home. Michigan, Auburn, Ole Miss, Missouri and LSU. They do have to go to Tennessee, and they do have to go to South Carolina. So, you know, I think this is a team that maybe come late October we're looking at and saying, can the Sooners really compete into November for the championship? I think they could be there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that'd be one heck of an impressive turnaround. Speaking of turnaround, the model's got Auburn also 9-3 would be the best season yet under Hugh Freeze.
This is another one where people, you know, scoff and eye roll. It's like, come on, you know, miss me with that, as the young kids would say. But hey, for Hugh Freeze, Jackson Arnold still projects as, you know, a high-end quarterback. And for Hugh Freeze, he better hope so, right? I mean, Auburn, again, another team that's worked the transfer portal. Last year they were in some ball games. If you go back and let me do this really, really quickly. If you go back and look at Auburn, and I'm going to pull it on my stat deck real quickly from last year. I mean, this is a team that, you know, they had a 7-point loss to Cal. They had a 6-point loss to Oklahoma. They had a 4-point loss to Missouri. They had a 10-point loss to Vanderbilt that probably should have never happened. And then, so, you know, there's several games they left on the table. And a lot of that we know is because they just couldn't generate first downs, which has been very rare under Hugh Freeze. But coincidentally, it's been that way the first 2 years at Auburn. So very similar to Brian Harsin's first 2 years. If he can get that offense going, this is a team that can win 9 games. And we know Auburn is the most Jekyll and Hyde program inside the Southeastern Conference.
Yeah, no doubt. Ole Miss, 8-4, according to the model. They're always competitive with Lane Kiffin down there, but the model sees a slight step back for the Rebels.
Yeah, just a slight step back. I know they really like their quarterback room there, as they should. I mean, again, I think Lane Kiffin has done, as good a job with anybody in the transfer portal about bringing in new talent. As far as quarterback play, now two quarterbacks, Matt Corral and Jackson Dart in the NFL for Lane Kiffin here recently over the last several years. So a schedule that is very, very favorable for Ole Miss again up front. The first 4 weeks. Now they do have to go to Kentucky. They don't want to sleepwalk there. I'm sure they'll be motivated after the loss last year. But then they host LSU. This is a team that can get off to a 5-0 start. I've got Ole Miss falling slightly to LSU. They do host Washington State, of course, in a non-conference game. But then the meat really hits there. Georgia on the road, Oklahoma on the road, South Carolina. They'll host Florida after the Citadel, and then they'll host or go to Mississippi State. So I feel like this will be somewhat of a step back for Ole Miss. Talent still very good. Not quite, just took a slight step off last year just because of the draft picks they lost, but still a very good football team.
Mm-hmm. Now, Jake, this is where you're going to lose our entire audience base out of Tuscaloosa. We haven't even mentioned mighty Alabama. You nailed them last year. This year, the models got them 8-4 again. Kalen DeBoer, man, what a disappointing season that would be for the Tide fans.
It would. Look, again, Alabama, when you kind of comb through some of the SEC metrics, what we don't know is how good is Ty Simpson. And right now he is 12th on my list of quarterbacks in the SEC. And I know Alabama fans want to go burn down a Waffle House or do something there with that. But we don't know. Like we can't base it on what we think he's going to be. So, if he performs better than 12th, obviously that is a plus. Kalen DeBoer, I have as the fourth best coach in the conference. You look at talent, Alabama's still right there at, number two, right there with Texas, LSU, and Georgia and some others. But I think you have to question, there's some intangibles here that we saw with Alabama last year as far as possible toughness, preparedness. I mean, Kalen DeBoer even mentioned it himself midway through the year, which was a head scratcher. And I'm paraphrasing. Well, we've got to do things a little differently. Get guys to tuck in their shirt, buckle their belt. And you're going, wait a minute. Why are you just now doing all this? So I do think Ryan Grubb coming in as the OC, that will give this team a spark offensively, with that kind of duo, that 1-2 duo. Florida State on the road. Let me just say this. We don't know what kind of team Florida State's going to have either. Is this going to be the 13-0 version Florida State Seminoles or the 2-win version last year? Alabama should go win that game. If Kalen DeBoer was to go drop one in Tallahassee week one, Mike, I don't know what would happen to your show. The server would probably explode.
Oh, that'd be a fun emergency podcast. Trust me on that one.
I've got them winning that. Georgia, I've got them losing Georgia on the road in a close ball game. South Carolina on the road in a close ball game. I've also got them losing to LSU and then Auburn at the end of the year. So, but those are games that will be in play. I mean, this team is really close. I wouldn't be surprised if they go 8-4, and I wouldn't be surprised if Alabama's playing for the SEC title game either.
Yeah. Well, you mentioned South Carolina. Your model's got them right there as well at 8-4. But I did want to highlight, because this was a head-scratcher to me, Shane Beamer, the number 12 coach in the conference. Explain yourself, model.
Absolutely. And look, I got several people, I believe, coming off something you shared from me, Carolina fans, again, calling me a fraud from this, and I get it. And it's very hard to explain something like this through a tweet or an X post or a social media post. So when you look at these are a 3-year rolling model, meaning coaches are judged and are graded based on wins and losses, top 25 wins, top 25 losses. If you lose to an FCS opponent or a lesser opponent, a group of five opponent, you are dinged for that. So if you win a conference championship, that obviously helps you a little bit. So let's go look real quickly at Shane Beamer. Because a lot of times, in especially in sports and in life, we have, we'll consider recency bias. So we remember last year and we remember South Carolina for what South Carolina was, which was a team that averaged 31 a game. They gave up 18 a game. Those are heavy, heavy numbers. 9-4 team, lost to Illinois, in the bowl game. That was a very, very close ball game. They lost to Alabama by 2. They should have beat LSU. I mean, this team was right on the precipice of being just, possibly playing for the Southeastern Conference Championship. So that's what people remember. But if we go back over the last 3 years, 2 years ago, he was 5-7. And 3 years ago, he was 8-5. So, Who is Shane Beamer? Is he a 9-4 coach? Is he a 5-7 coach? Is he a 6-6 coach? So all of those years are kind of merged together, and that brings him, to the, the lower end there, right there with Brent Venables and Mark Stoops, just right behind Eli Drinkwitz and Mike Elko, right in front of Jeff Levy. Billy Napier's down that list, again, because it is a three-year moving scale, Clark Lea and Sam Pittman. So I don't know if that answers your question, but it's a moving scale, and I think you have to look more than just last year, and you really can't look over the course of an entire career, because sometimes guys go up, and again, sometimes guys go down, and that's kind of where we're at with Beamer.
Yeah. And your model's also got Florida 8-4 with Billy Napier, number 14, which I would agree with that. I mean, I think he's obviously done a nice job last year, but that's about the only nice thing I can say about his tenure there in Gainesville.
Yeah, and both of those teams very, very similar at 8-4. And I think both teams are capable of possibly, being in the conversation for the college football playoff, being in the conversation in November for playing for the SEC title. It's going to depend. So, who would you rather run with? Would you rather run, with DJ Lagway, or would you rather run, with what is going on there in South Carolina and Lenore Sellers, who I have is the fifth best quarterback. So I think there are some pivotal games. You look at Florida, for instance, at LSU, at Miami, back to back. If Florida comes out of that stretch 4-0, it could be game on, especially with Texas coming into Gainesville 2 weeks later. Of course, they do have to go to Texas A&M, and then we know about the cocktail party and down the road. Same way for South Carolina, a chance to really pop off the page against Virginia Tech week one. They really should start out, and I do have them starting out 5-0, South Carolina. But then after the bye week, that stretch in between the two byes, at LSU, Oklahoma, Alabama, at Ole Miss, that is their absolute season. Of course, with Texas A&M and Clemson. So I think, both of those teams are very similar. Both of those teams are getting high praise, as they should, in the preseason. Is it Lenore Sellers? Is it DJ Lagway? If both of those guys perform at the top, we may see Carolina and Florida in the SEC title game.
Mm-hmm. And then another disappointed fan base is going to be Mizzou. 6-6, also Vanderbilt 6-6. Even though you love your model loves Diego Pavia, why Mizzou 6-6? And I think even Vanderbilt, I think they'd be happy with 6-6. But Mizzou, they may riot.
Well, I wasn't a buyer of Missouri stock last year. A lot of people had Missouri, a team that was going to make the college football playoff. I looked at their schedule. I looked at their talent. Schedule was manageable. I just felt like they were lacking in some of the talent metrics. I felt like some of the efficiencies defensively, offensively, they did not meet, some of the standards that your Ohio State's or even Ole Miss at the time, pick a team, Alabama, teams that we're talking about for the college football playoff. This year, a quarterback change for Missouri, obviously losing Luther Burden III, I think it hurts really big, especially when you start looking at the wide receiver room. What does that look like? They've got a week two ball game against Kansas. That's a game that I don't think they can sleepwalk by, because Kansas has a really good quarterback coming out of the Big 12 in that conference. But, we'll find out. I mean, Central Arkansas, Lafayette, and UMass in the first run before the bye, with Kansas and South Carolina in there. But then, again, after that, it is extremely tough. Alabama at Auburn, at Vanderbilt, Texas A&M, Mississippi State, you go down the road all the way. And one of the things you got to remember, too, is it's not just who you play. It's who you play before and who you play after, because, Jackie Sherrill said this one time, and I'll never forget it, when he was at Mississippi State. He said, really, we can only get these guys up for about three ball games a year as coaches. Like rah-rah stuff, first game of the season, last game of the season against a rival, and a big one in the middle. He said, other than that, we're going to have to rely on our seniors, our leadership, and then our talent. And if we're just outmatched, we're outmatched. And that doesn't mean we quit and lay down, but odds are, it's not going to be kind to us. And you look at a team like Missouri, I don't know that they have the roster to go, play host Bama this week, turn around, get up next week, go to Auburn, turn around and go to Vanderbilt, turn around and play Texas A&M. That's just a wear you down type of deal. And I think that's why you see midseason, from about week four on, you'll wake up on a Saturday when you think, well, the slate's not that great today. And then you got a team in the fourth quarter fighting for their life that shouldn't be. I just think mentally it where, and this is something we can't quantify as, you know, who's got the mental edge? Who's going to be able to, you know, to get it up each and every week and just go out and roll the ball out and play. And, you know, I think that schedule lends itself to about a 6-6 or 7-5 for Missouri. And when you talk about Vanderbilt, Diego Pavia, love that guy. We love his energy. I just don't know that they have the roster to be any more competitive than that.
Yeah, I think that's fair, but I would also, I mean, this, I'm not trying to talk down to Vanderbilt, but I think another bowl trip, I think that's progress for Clark Lee, given the years prior. You know what?
Yeah. No, I would 100% agree. I mean, you know, when they kind of changed things and started bringing in, you know, guys from recruiting services and saying, hey, we're going to, you know, do things a little differently, I thought, I am kind of interested to see how they do this because, you know, at a place like Vanderbilt, you got to be a little different, right? I mean, we don't know the money that Vanderbilt has. I'm sure it is a ton of money, but how much are they willing to commit to football? So they've got to recruit it differently. They got to do it differently. So far, the last, you know, year and a half to 2 years, it has paid off. Now, the one thing about Vanderbilt this year is they're not sneaking up on anybody. Diego Pavia is not sneaking up on anybody. Everybody knows who he is. So they'll have to be dialed in each and every week.
Mm-hmm. And then last, you got Kentucky State and Arkansas, all at 4-8. I think all those fan bases are feeling that this year. Can you give any optimism, any hope for any of these teams that maybe they can exceed the model's expectations?
You know, I think, you know, Arkansas, even though they went bowling last year, I think they're a team with Bobby Petrino and that staff that could outperform 4-8 for sure. You know, you look at Arkansas, you know, they host Notre Dame, you know, about 5 or 6 weeks in. You know, if they could somehow come up with a big win against a Notre Dame, or, you know, they also host Texas or that Texas A&M game or that Auburn game. If they could win a couple of those games, I mean, this is a team I think that, you know, you would start to see as far the fan base, a lot of more, you know, people that are buying into what Sam Pittman is putting in there. But other than that, I mean, that run of Notre Dame, Ole Miss, Memphis, Notre Dame, Tennessee, Texas A&M, similar with Missouri, I just think it's too much to ask. The schedule is too much to ask. You know, I think for Kentucky, if their quarterback situation works out, if Mark Stoops can find some offense, he may be able to pick up a win or two. So there's some optimism there. But for Mississippi State, you know, for Jeff Lebby, it's just, hey, can we be more competitive? That defense last year was atrocious. They look more like an SEC football team defensively. You want to see Jeff Lebby in year two with Blake Shapen, this offense pop. But again, for Mississippi State, I mean, you know, I've got them winning 4 non-conference games. They've got 2 early that they cannot lose. They have to go to Southern Miss week 1. That is a big ball game for them because Southern Miss has rebuilt that program as well. Charles Huff comes in and brings half of Marshall's team down with him from the quarterback. I mean, literally, we've been calling them the Southern Miss Fighting Herd. I mean, it is that is who they are. So Levy can ill afford to go on the road and lose that week 1. He's got Sam Levitt and Arizona State coming in week 3. He can't lose that one. It's going to be a tough run for Mississippi State. But if I had to kind of peg them and which team could kind of pull it back into the middle of the road and go 6-6 or 7-5 and go bowling, I'd probably go, you know, Kentucky, then Arkansas, then Mississippi State.
Mm-hmm. All right, Jake, we took up way too much of your time. I really appreciate this deep dive. Before you go, can you tell the audience how to follow you and how they can check all this out more in depth?
Absolutely. Look, I appreciate you having me on. And of course, it's never too much time. Always great to visit with you, Michael. I'm on X at Jake Wim. And of course, you can follow me there. Feel free to burn the mentions up after we put this out. And then, of course, you can go to cfbhourglass.com to get all the reading on this as well. And all the articles are pretty much done the same. You can see, you know, a lot of symmetry in the articles. And then, of course, you can listen to my show 3-6 each and every day here in the great state of Mississippi. If you're inside the state of Mississippi on 105.9 in central Mississippi area on the FM dial. And of course, you can go to thezone1059.com. We'd love you to tune in with us.
Hey, Jake.